Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you, filling in for Jim today and tomorrow. Thank you for listening. As always, the program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Phone number here, 1-800-636-8686, RomeandHeavyTake.com. Jim is on Twitter, at Jim Rome, JimRome.com. You can also tweet at me, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. In just a few minutes, we're going to have on the program an 8-year NFL veteran, a guy that does pre- and post-game for the Rams, ESPN college football analyst, and the second guy I ever had the pleasure to host a radio show with, Kirk Morrison, coming up in just a few minutes. Bill Orem, who covers the Lakers for The Athletic, will be on the show toward the end of the hour, that 1:40 Eastern time, 10:40 Pacific time slot. And next hour, we'll visit with Bob Nightingale, covers baseball for USA Today. Mr. Kirk Morrison is in the Hall of Fame in his alma mater, San Diego State. He is a former Raider, and he is a busy, busy man, pre- and post-game work for the Rams, ESPN college football analyst, on Twitter at Kirk Morrison. Mr. Morrison, what's up, buddy?
Long time, Bill. How you been, my man? What's going on?
You know, just grinding through this 2020. It's been what it's been. You guys are good. You guys are healthy. Everyone's okay in the Morrison household.
We're taking it day by day, man. You know, each day it gets better. Obviously, you got to focus on the family and kind of just staying put. So the kids, they're doing okay. I've been playing a couple different roles. You know, teacher,
yep.
Principal. You know, the PE teacher for sure. But then, you know, doing all the academics and just keeping them busy has been good. But having sports back has been great, Bill.
I know you're
pretty excited about the NBA.
Oh, my God, dude. It's been so great. I mean, hell, I've been into soccer just because I was desperate for anything. I'm watching so much baseball and, of course, NBA. Kirk Morrison here on the show. And, Kirk, we talked about this. I did an hour ago. MLB, you know, hopefully it's going to have some success. We've already seen 6 teams shut down 17 games, positive COVID-19 tests, reports of some, you know, some bad behavior from some players going out doing things that they can't. If they're going to have this season, the NFL is also going to operate, obviously, outside of a bubble. What are you hearing from guys, just the confidence level the NFL season is going to start and finish?
Well, I'll tell you, we're in a crucial month for the NFL. The month of August is going to be very crucial, Bill, and the reason why is because you're going to have a lot of guys at training camp, and you're going to have a lot of positive tests. There's just no doubt in my mind. I really believe that. And I think the NFL understands that. They're aware of that. They're not going to freak out if they have positive tests throughout a team, right? We just saw that Doug Peterson, head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, he tested positive. I say that because a lot of players, Bill, they necessarily don't have a primary physician. Okay, a lot of players, when they get sick, anything happens, they go to the team doctor who's been available to them. But because of 2020 and the pandemic and teams not allowing players into the facility, a lot of players really haven't been to a doctor or had, you know, physicals or things like that because it's always been done through the team. Maybe older players, but not the younger players. So with players returning to training camp and these facilities, you're going to get some positive cases of guys who have not had testing readily available to them or they've been asymptomatic. I think the NFL is going to handle those, but then I've always felt this, Bill, throughout my career, the safest place that I could ever be, and this is no lie, the safest place I could ever be was my team's facility. Like, when I walked in my team's facility, I felt safe. You know, security guards, the whole nine. I mean, it's like being in Fort Knox as a player, but to have the testing readily available every single day, to have, you know, temperature checks, to have all the protocols in place, each team's facility. This entire month, I think the NFL can get a grip and a handle with each of their 32 teams, and then hopefully they should be ready to go by the September 10th opening game between Kansas City and Houston. No preseason games definitely gives me a lot of optimism from the people who I've talked to, Bill, that this can happen. It's just they're going to need a lot of support from the players being responsible.
Kirk Morrison here on the show. Kirk, I asked this exact question on this exact show, on the Jim Rome Show, of Jock Peterson, the L.A. Dodger, a couple weeks ago, and I'll ask you the same question but about the NFL. What do you think the likelihood is that the National Football League can count on, you know, thousands of guys doing the right thing when they're not at that safe place, when they're not at that NFL facility, when they're on their own private time?
It's going to be difficult. But, you know, I'm just listening to a lot of quotes from the coaches over the past weekend. I think Mike Tomlin said it best. This is going to be a time where a lot of players have to be responsible, but they also have to be selfish, right? And being selfish is not a bad thing in this sense. Being selfish is telling family and friends, people who you normally are in contact with daily, that for the next 6 months, right, or maybe a little bit longer, depending on how our season finishes, I've got to be a little selfish and be sort of toward my be sort of all for myself. I've got to basically isolate myself from my family, isolate myself from a lot of the outside world, which is what everyone's kind of dealing with. And so I think a lot of the responsibility is going to be on the players, right? I think the older players, they understand it. Younger players may not. But when you think about it, this is what everybody in America is dealing with right now currently. So as much as we look at it as an NFL situation, an MLB situation, this currently is something I think you and I are living with too, is keeping ourselves self-isolated. You know, I've taken COVID tests and antibody tests, and I've been negative, but I continue to keep up the same prowess over the last, you know, after my negative test, to continue to keep doing the work so that I don't contract the virus. It'll be the same, for, I think, for players, is that you still have to go out and be responsible. You still have to do the right things. Because now if you decide to be lax, then guess what? You now affect not only the 53-man roster, but you affect the whole entire organization. I'll tell you this, Bill. I don't want to be that guy walking in and saying, I got a positive test, and all of a sudden that my team's affected because of me. I don't want that kind of pressure on me at all. So that's why I say that it's going to be the responsibility of the players. And if they do that, what's right, I think that this thing really start to go and the NFL can have a season.
Kirk Morrison might be the busiest man in media here on the Jim Rome Show. ESPN college football broadcaster. He is a host for the Rams pre and post game. You can hear him on SiriusXM NFL. You contribute to The Athletic, and you're a principal and teacher for your kids in that four-letter word we call Zoom. For that Rams team, what is the realistic expectations that Rams fans can look to this season with, Kirk?
It's going to be a season of change for sure. So many different angles I can go with this one, Bill, really. Obviously, I'll start with the running back position. We know Todd Gurley is now with the Atlanta Falcons, no longer a Ram. And so the Rams are going to implement a running back by committee. They'll have Malcolm Brown, who's kind of been with the team as Todd Gurley's primary backup. Darrell Henderson, who they drafted last year in the third round, he'll be another guy who'll be contributing to that spot. And then he spent a second-round pick in one of the better backs, I think, in his draft, in Cam Akers. So it'll be a running back by committee, which I think will help out this team because they're going to have a lot of guys kind of contribute in a way that Todd Gurley did by himself. But I think with a three-headed monster, and we've seen how San Francisco used it, we saw how Kansas City used it, a lot of teams, they use multiple backs nowadays. I think that helps them out. But I think the bigger thing, if you ask me one thing, Kirk, you say, hey, Kirk, one thing, give me one thing about the Rams that you think that they can have some success this year. I think the success comes by Sean McVay hiring an offensive coordinator, Kevin O'Connell. And I'm not just saying that because he was my college quarterback at San Diego State. I'm saying that is because that's a role that, you know, Sean McVay hasn't filled the last two prior seasons. And it was difficult because teams kept plucking away his guys, right? Whether it was Matt LaFleur, who was there in year one with McVay, he goes to where? Tennessee. Now he's a head coach in Green Bay. He has Zach Taylor sort of in that role. And what happens? He gets stolen away. He's the head coach in Cincinnati. I thought that that's what hurt the Rams, not having an offensive coordinator, another voice in the quarterback room to help out McVay with some of these calls. And so I think now him hiring an offensive coordinator allows McVay to really coach the team and not necessarily focus so much on trying to be head coach, offensive coordinator, quarterback coach. So I think I'm going to focus on that, why I think the Rams have a little more success this year, Bill, than last year.
Kirk Morrison here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in for Jim. Kirk, let me put you on the spot since we're buddies and I've known you a while. This isn't a big on the spot, but Tampa Bay versus the Patriots, lots of changes, obviously, with those organizations. Which team is going to have more success this year? Which team is going to win more games and go further in the postseason? Bill Belichick and his Cam Newton-led Patriots or Tom Brady and the Buccaneers?
Wow, that's a put me to the fire there. It's a tough one because, I mean, we've seen, what, 8 Patriots already opt out for the 2020 season. So it's like you're trying to figure out what kind of roster will the Patriots kind of fill out. They'll have, obviously, Cam Newton came in at quarterback. But I look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and as much as I have a lot of confidence in Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, the Mike Evans and those guys down in Tampa, it's a little tough for me because they're also in a division that they're going to play against Drew Brees and those Saints twice. They're going to play against, Teddy Bridgewater in Carolina. I know they're a young team and, new head coach, but they're going to be tough. And the Atlanta Falcons and Matt Ryan, I think that they've got a chip on their shoulder. I just look at how difficult it may be, right now for, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But at the same time, I look at what's going on in New England, Bill, and it's tough that the Patriots can go 9-7, maybe 10-6, and still have a strong opportunity of getting to a conference championship game. I just think that they're still one of the better teams in their division. Obviously, Kansas City on the other end. But honestly, even with the shifting of what's going on with the Patriots organization, are they still not one of the top 3 or 4 teams in the AFC currently? I would still think so. So I'm going to, if you put me to the fire, I'm going to say I think that the Patriots still have a better season than Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I really believe that. But the success of the Buccaneers could be just making the playoffs, which I still see both teams doing.
I love it. Kirk Morrison here on the show. Kirk, last one for you. I know you're going to just love this question along with all other Raiders fans as a longtime Raider. But I got to ask you, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, yeah, man, if you had to just predict how many Super Bowls going forward, how many more this dude is going to win, now that we know he's going to be in Kansas City for a long time, what's a realistic number to put that at?
I would say 2.
2 more?
I think 2.
It's a lot.
Yeah, just 2 more. Just we know how difficult it is to put together a Super Bowl winning season. I mean, Tom Brady turns 43 years old today, and he's got 6 rings. And you think about what's helped him throughout his 6 rings is, basically bringing in the talent that's there. And obviously having a sort of a way, a culture that's been built. A lot of times we forget that Tom Brady won a lot of his Super Bowls in the beginning on the back of his defense, not necessarily his offense. That kind of shifted in his later years. Even having those 2 trips to the Super Bowl that they did not win against the New York Giants. And so that's why I think, Bill, he wins about 2 more. I think he'll have opportunities to get back. But let's look at their defense. Their defense wasn't one of the best last year in Kansas City. They've got to continue to keep retooling that. We know Mahomes is going to make a ton of money, and we know that means that what happens, you're going to have to figure out ways to be a little more cost-efficient offensively, where guys are going to start making a lot more money. So I think he wins about 2 more. I think he makes 4 more trips. But just the NFL in general, man, it gets tougher. It doesn't get any easier. That's why I really marveled at what New England and those guys were able to do almost in like 2 different, decades almost. Like the first decade, Tom, and then the second decade, Tom, and the Patriots. I want to see what this first one looks like when this window closes, and then how does it reopen for Patrick Mahomes.
Kirk Morrison, you're a good man. You're a busy man. You enjoy the Zoom magic that is all of our lives with your children's education. Stay healthy, buddy, and thanks for making time.
All right, man. Hey, stay cool, man. Stay inside. A lot of AC going right now down here in Southern California, brother.
I will.
Talk to you soon, Bill.
Thanks, buddy. Kirk Morrison on the program, longtime NFL player on Twitter, at Kirk Morrison. Here's a crazy concept. I thought of this today. I was driving in, Bill Ryder filling in for Jim here on the Jim Rome Show. I was just thinking, like, what would happen if I just no-showed this show? If I pulled a Yoannis Cespedes, if I was just like, you know what? I'm out. Alvin and Rick can just handle it themselves. You know what I would do? I would pick up the phone. Pick up the phone. Why Cespedes pulled the ultimate Mets move. Man, those poor Mets fans. When we come back, we'll dive into that here in just a minute on the Jim Rome Show. Have you had trouble finding time to fully wax your car? 303 Touchless Sealant will save you hours. The SiO2 based formula is completely touchless and a quicker alternative to waxing your vehicle, and lasts twice as long. It's so easy to use. Simply spray on and rinse off. 303 Touchless Sealant provides superior protection against paint fading and provides the ultimate shine in no time. It only takes minutes to get that same water-beating protection you get from a full wax, saving you hours spent in the garage. Safe for paint, gel coat, fiberglass, plastics, and can even be used on your windshield and wheels too. It can also be used when you're looking to prolong the time in between waxes or ceramic coatings. 303 products have been trusted for over 40 years and are the official car care products of Mecum Auctions. Available now at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts, AutoZone, or Advance Auto Parts store. Visit 303radio.com for more information.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back into the Jim Rome Show. My name is Bill Ryder, filling in for Jim. 1-800-636-8686. Rome at haveatake.com. At Jim Rome on Twitter. JimRome.com. SportsWriter, SportsWriter is me. This weekend on CBS, the best golfers in the world head west for the season's first major. Will Brooks Koepka take home his third consecutive Wanamaker Trophy, or will someone else step up to take their place in history? The PGA Championship is live starting Saturday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on CBS. 1-800-636-8686. That's the old muscle memory of the old show. Back in the day on CBS Sports Radio. On Twitter, SportsWriter, SportsWriter. This is a good tweet. NateThomas79 tweets at me, "The Pacers never seem to get any media love. Maybe you can give them some jungle karma. T.J. Warren drops 53, but the entire narrative is Embiid scoring 40 in a losing effort." I'm with you, dude. And that's so obnoxious because it's not like Philly is a two seed that has a legitimate chance at some deep postseason run. Philly hasn't looked that good. They're going to be a bottom-of-the-barrel seeded team. They're probably going to have to go through Boston in order to make a run. So a Boston-Toronto Bucks. Sixers aren't winning anything this year. They don't like each other. Ben Simmons can't shoot the basketball. Sort of an important thing when you're a point guard converted to power forward. Hell, it's kind of an important thing if you play basketball in 2020. I think part of the reason, you're right, the Pacers don't get the love they deserve. I think part of the reason is, it's obviously the market. They're the middle of the country where I'm from. I'm from Iowa. I mean, same sort of area. And some of it too is we thought Victor Oladipo was going to opt out. And as he goes, so goes the team. The fact that he's going to play, you're right, they should get more love and respect. They play really good defense. They're an interesting team. They're well coached. They made some nice additions last year, which seems like 2 billion years ago. I like the Pacers, man. I'm with you. And it is. It is the most frustrating thing in the world when you beat the snot out of somebody and they get all the love and attention. I'm with you. I'll give you some Pacers love. I'll come up with some Pacers stuff for tomorrow here on the Jim Rome Show. Let's go to the phone lines. 1-800-636-8686. My guy, longtime listener of the very shows I've done, Mitch in New Jersey, is on the Jim Rome Show. Hi, Mitch.
How you doing, Bill? Hope everything's good. Love you. Love to miss you.
Thanks, buddy.
Hey, you can say this for the Dodgers, but I want to talk about the Clippers. It's about damn time. I think it's coming through. They made some good trades, good drafting. Maybe like the Paul George trade. But seeing him play, especially game two, I love it. They were shooting, they're rebounding, and they were making the shots. I think this team is deep, and they're going all the way. What do you think? And thanks for taking my call, brother.
Yeah, Mitch, appreciate you. I think the Clippers are the best team in the NBA. I think that was evident in that Lakers game that they lost. They didn't have Lou Williams because he went to a gentleman's club to wink, wink, get some food. And they didn't have Montrezl Harrell. And a lot of the threats, so like take the Rockets. Do I think the Rockets are going to beat an LA team? I don't. But I think the Lakers are a lot more susceptible to the Rockets getting hot than the Clippers are. The Clippers are long and athletic, and they're also the best team in the NBA in terms of perimeter defense, which is critical, obviously, in 2020. I think I dropped the stat last time. I'm going to do it again. It amazes me. Last year, when you broke down individual defenders trying to stop or slow down Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee, Giannis during his MVP season, then the second most effective basketball player, interestingly, was Blake Griffin, who held Giannis to 32-ish points per 100 possessions, which, by the way, is amazing that that's the second most effective guy. That is scary stuff. The most effective guy, and most of these numbers came obviously from their playoff series, was Kawhi Leonard, who cut that in half. 15 and change points for Giannis per 100 possessions when Kawhi was on him. Think about that. A guy that was literally unstoppable, just about unstoppable, was the MVP, was half as effective when Kawhi Leonard guarded him. And as good as that Raptors team was, and they were great, you know what they didn't have? Paul George, who is as good a two-way player as anybody in the NBA, and a remarkable defender, and right now playing at an MVP level. Then you have all the depth of that Clippers team, which I think is going to be more important depth in the playoffs, this bizarro scenario than it has in the past. And another thing that I've been sort of obsessed with, probably because I live in Los Angeles, California, that no one's talked about, I think should, Clippers-Lakers is supposed to be the inevitable showdown, right? The big showdown. And we know home court advantage in a normal scenario matters. Do you know what the Clippers would never have had ever in a seven-game series against the Lakers at Staples Center, even on their home games, is home court advantage. You go back to the opener this year, Clippers-Lakers, I think was actually a Clippers game, and it was full of Lakers fans. The fact that it's a neutral court is a huge advantage for the Clippers against the Lakers, because the Lakers would have had seven home games against the Clippers. And that's wiped off. And the Clippers roster is just better. It's a coin flip. I'm not going to pretend that I think it's an easy call to say the Clippers beat the Lakers. In my job, filling in on the Jim Rome Show, and Bill Ryder, by the way, doing radio, doing TV on CBS Sports HQ, writing at CBSSports.com, they want you to make predictions, no problem. I think so. That being the case, I think the Clippers are going to come out of the Western Conference. But it's a coin flip. I know it's going to be heads or tails when I flip a coin. I know it. I got a 50% chance. It's kind of what it feels like this year. It's going to be the Clippers or the Lakers. The Clippers can't and won't lose to the Rockets because their perimeter defense is so remarkable. The Lakers can. I don't think they will. But if the Clippers play the Rockets 10 times, I think the Clippers win that series 10 times. The Lakers, no, they win it 8 maybe. Avery Bradley is such a remarkable loss for the Lakers. Again, I'm going to geek out on another stat here just for a second. If you break down individual defenders for the Lakers, just how those defenders guarded their opponents, Avery Bradley was the most effective. Opponents that Avery Bradley guarded, and Avery Bradley, as you hopefully know, but I should tell you, did not choose to come to the restart. So before the NBA season shut down, Avery Bradley held opponents that he guarded individually to 36% or 37% shooting. That's great. He's a great 3 and D guy, the D being critically important. Threes are important too, but the D is a big part of what he did. But in the three games that Avery Bradley played against the Clippers, he held whatever Clipper he defended to 25% shooting from the field. That's an astounding stat. And Avery Bradley's not going to be there to guard one or several of those Rockets. Remember, the Rockets switch all the time. Again, I don't think the Rockets are going to beat the Lakers, but I think they have a 1.5 out of 10, you know, 15% chance. The Clippers are built to beat a team like the Rockets. So that's one wild card you can throw out. I don't think the Mavericks have the horses to beat the Clippers. I think they can make it a series. I don't buy Denver. Portland's interesting, but it's not going to be effective against... It wasn't effective against some of the teams we've already seen them play. So, yeah, Mitch, I really, really like that Clippers team. I think they're really good and really impressive and really interesting. Now, of course, the Lakers have LeBron James, and that's a massive thing. And we saw this a little bit, by the way. LeBron can go beast mode defensively, too. I get so annoyed by people saying that LeBron doesn't play defense anymore, that LeBron can't play defense. No, LeBron chooses, and you can be angry about it or not, to preserve himself, even though he plays a lot of minutes, to not wear himself out. And so he doesn't go crazy defensively in the regular season. But did you see him against Kawhi Leonard last week in that opener, in the fourth quarter? I mean, LeBron It was like a basketball game happened and a street brawl almost broke out. Those guys wanted to destroy each other. That's going to be such a matchup. So LeBron is certainly, obviously, a major X factor. But I'm with you, Mitch. I think the Clippers are the best team in the NBA. The other thing is that's amazing about all of this is that the Clippers are totally healthy. And they were trying to be anyway to get that rest. And you can make the argument so are other teams. But Kawhi was a little banged up. Paul George was a little banged up. When they get Lou Williams back, Montrezl Harrell, that Clippers team is really, really good. So I was going to talk to you about Yoenis Cespedes. I guess I'll do this really quickly. I mean, can you imagine just not showing up? Like, I love doing this show. It's such a thrill. Jim Rome, as I've mentioned, Jim has been a huge advocate of my career, like all these other writers and former writers he's had on the show. So I would never not show up. But if I just woke up today, right, and like, you know what? I think I'm done with radio. I think I'm going to get into poetry and, philosophy and yoga. I would pick up the phone and be like, hey, Alvin. Hey, Garrett. I'm outsies. I'm out. I'm a. What Major League Baseball player? I guess a Met is the answer. Haha. What Major League Baseball player packs up his stuff? And by the way, you have a right to opt out for health reasons. We saw Lorenzo Cain did it. You know what Lorenzo Cain did, though? This crazy concept. He told his team. But it's just like he just vanished. Like some weird, I guess it's not a one-night stand because he's been with the Mets for a few years now, even if he's been hurt, but three-night stand, does such a thing exist? I don't think it does. I'm married. I don't know. I don't know what the kids are doing these days. Pick up the phone, you selfish idiot. Come on. People were worried about him. When I saw the headline, you must have too. A part of me thought, oh my gosh, I hope the guy's not dead in the gutter somewhere. Like, why would you not show up for work? Your phone broke? Just walk down the hall. He was in the team hotel. Just, hey, I'm out. That would have been, a surprise, but enough. What a knucklehead. All right, let's keep with some NBA talk here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Rutter filling in. Bill Oram covers the Lakers for The Athletic. I'm pretty sure there's some federal law that 83% of sports writers must write for that particular spot. It's like, it's everybody. It's everybody. We'll talk to one of those guys, Bill Oram, about the Lakers, the biggest threat to that team, whether the Rockets could surprise them, and a bunch of other things. Bill Oram coming up here on the Jim Rome Show just after we get a CBS Sports Radio update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. As you get back to business, Grainger is there to help with supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, safety recovery guides, 24/7 support, and more. Visit Grainger.com/recovery. Grainger for the ones who get it done. You know who gets it done? Is a gentleman who writes for The Athletic, covers the Lakers, does a tremendous job at that, and is a bourbon aficionado. This is a renaissance man in Bill Oram, who joins me now on the program on Twitter, at Bill Oram. Hello, Mr. Oram. How are you, buddy?
I'm great, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm good. I hope you are staying healthy and sane in what's been a bizarre 2020.
To say the least, right? Same to you.
So let's talk about this Lakers team. We're only a couple games in. What have you made? What are the takeaways from this Lakers team that you cover from their restart so far?
I think in the aggregate, it's been pretty encouraging. LeBron has looked pretty spry offensively. He's struggled. He's gone into the fourth quarter. It at least has been late or pretty deep into the second half, both of these first games before he cracked double digits. So the scoring hasn't been there. But really defensively, this Lakers team has been locked in. If you go back to that Raptors game, obviously they got away from them in the last 6 minutes, but it was tied at 83 with about 6 minutes left in the fourth. And, obviously that's two of the three best defenses in the league, but I think encouraging that the Lakers had held that Raptors team to 83 through 42 minutes of basketball. The problem is they could only score 83 points through 42 minutes of basketball. But this is a team that has really made its mark defensively this year. Obviously Anthony Davis is in the mix for Defensive Player of the Year, probably won't win it, but is in the mix. LeBron has been very good defensively. And, what's been encouraging about the start is Kyle Kuzma has been a good defender. He has been bringing the intensity defensively. Alex Caruso, who we know is a good defender, but has kind of stepped into that Avery Bradley role in taking on some of the on-ball defense against the other guards they've faced. So I'm curious to see when the offense comes for the Lakers, but we knew that this was part of the benefit of them having such a lead in the Western Conference, where they just need to win one of these remaining six games to lock up the one seed in the West. And so they have a little bit of room for error to get themselves ready for the playoffs in a couple of weeks.
Bill Orem here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in for Jim. Mr. Orem, you brought up Avery Bradley. How significant is his absence, to your mind, going to be when we get to seven-game series against teams like the Clippers, against actual contenders?
You know, what I'm interested in, because I think it's a huge loss, and I don't think that there's really any sugarcoating it. And the Lakers are fortunate in that they spent last offseason, they really loaded up on players like Avery Bradley, guys who can play defense and knock down open shots, but you're not really asking to create. But you could almost argue they went too far in that direction, where they don't have any of the ball handlers that that you have to kind of relieve around LeBron. But the biggest thing for me is the guards in the Western Conference are so incredibly good. So if the Lakers don't get Memphis in the first round, they don't get New Orleans, but if it's Portland, and Portland's coming at you with two really all NBA caliber, essentially point guards in Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, Houston, two MVP caliber point guards in Russell Westbrook and James Harden. The Lakers don't have players really outside of Avery Bradley who can be that full-time ball stopper like Bradley was. He was the guy who you would throw at Steph Curry. You could throw at Harden, and he would really make life difficult. And you have guys who will try. Like I said, Alex Caruso has certainly embraced the role, and we saw some nice moments from him against Kyle Lowry. But in terms of somebody who that's how they earn their living in the NBA, and suddenly you're going to be going against teams potentially that have two players like that. You know, the Jazz have Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell. We'll see that tonight in the Lakers' third game. I don't think the great guards in the Western Conference are a very favorable matchup for the Lakers. So I'm going to be, I'll absolutely be watching that. And listen, when the Lakers went out and had to replace Avery Bradley, they didn't get somebody who does what Avery Bradley did. They got J.R. Smith, who comes with his own set of skills, but it really doesn't alleviate any of what you lose in Bradley staying home.
Yeah, Bill, you brought up that Rockets team, and they're so interesting for so many reasons, and they've certainly looked sharp in their two games back. I mean, they put up some big numbers, including against a Bucks team that has the best, they didn't have Eric Bledsoe, but has the best defense in the NBA. Houston specifically in a matchup against the Lakers, how problematic in a seven-game series do you think that team actually could be for LA?
You know, it all is going to depend on how they shoot the ball, right? I mean, that's kind of what Houston's MO is at this point. If they're knocking down shots, you know, they're going to be tough to beat. And the Lakers, the Lakers are huge, right? They're one of the biggest teams in the league. They have, let's say, effectively 3 7-footers in Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, and Anthony Davis. And Houston's really going to make it hard to play any of those guys outside of AD, because they're gonna take Dwight and JaVale out of the paint with the way they spread the floor. And so really something that is a huge advantage for the Lakers against most teams that play at least one traditional big and allow the Lakers to really impose their size on the inside. Houston just doesn't really doesn't play by those rules. And we're going to see that again in these, at some point in these seeding games. I don't know, I don't have the schedule memorized, but I know we see Houston at some point in this in over the next couple of weeks. And it's interesting, Houston beat the Lakers in their first game after they traded Clint Capella and brought in Robert Covington. We weren't even sure if Robert Covington was going to play in that game. And then Houston ends up beating the Lakers in that first game as this small ball, trial balloon. And then the first game the first game into the hiatus, the next game the Lakers were supposed to play was going to be against Houston. And that felt like a real test for the Lakers to see if they could adjust to all the ways that Houston exploited them a few weeks earlier, right after the trade deadline. So that is one of the mysteries that we still have, is how the Lakers will adjust to what Houston is doing now. And obviously there's more of a sample size, there's more evidence, there's more film to go off of than the Lakers had, and they were caught off guard in that first Covington game. But I think it's a bad matchup for a lot of teams, but especially for a team like the Lakers that has had so much success by just really asserting itself inside against other teams.
Bill Orem here on the Jim Rome Show. Bill Ryder filling in for Jim. Bill, if you were to, for The Athletic, And I know it's been a small sample size, this Rockets team, the way they're now going to play basketball. But if you over the Athletic, you had to just compile a list of actual championship contenders. Not favorites, just teams you think can actually win an NBA championship this year. What side of the dividing line would you put the Rockets on?
You know, I probably have the Rockets on the not quite enough to get their side. I think there's more contenders in the bubble than people are giving credence to. I mean, people generally talk about this as Lakers, Clippers, Bucks, but I'll tell you, you know, I think the Raptors are there. I think the Celtics could be there. You know, the Sixers have a ton of talent. Houston has a ton of talent. Houston, I feel like when you get to the playoffs, they would have to win four series with their unusual style. I feel like their lack of size will catch up to them at some point in the postseason. You need to shoot lights out basically for, let's say, 28 straight games once you get into the playoffs. And I feel like that's going to be hard to do. But that said, I think Houston is the team that could absolutely disrupt the natural order of things in the bubble, where they could beat a Clippers team. They could beat the Lakers and kind of change the perceived likely route to the championship in the Western Conference. And then in the East, I just think there's a handful of teams that are in the mix. It's not just the Bucks.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Celtics. And I haven't seen the Raptors up close and personal for a long time, to the point where I don't even feel like I have a grasp on that team. You obviously just watched with great interest that squad. You buy them, huh? They're not to be underestimated, in your opinion.
You know, they're obviously fresh in my mind because of the game on Saturday. But there is something to be said for a team with some continuity. They've been through a lot of battles together, even before last year when they made the run to the championship. Not a team that overwhelms you with talent like Houston does up front. But Pascal Siakam is a legitimate star. Kyle Lowry is a battle-tested point guard. I mean, he was an absolute gamer against the Lakers, making all the huge plays. And then they're just a well-rounded roster. I mean, I look at even the Lakers team, a team that I spend the majority of my time studying and obsessing over as a function of my job, is still a very top-heavy roster. And then kind of these other pieces that work because they are in support of LeBron James and Anthony Davis. But it's not a symbiotic necessarily collection of players. There's still a lot of questions with this Lakers roster. A team like the Raptors, I look at as a fully realized version of what that team can be. And so I buy into them as a battle-tested, intense, defensive-minded group that can knock down shots and again win a playoff series against a team that maybe they are going in not as the favorite against. I mean, listen, people made this point on Saturday when they were beating the Lakers, but this is a defending champion that has the third best record in the NBA. That should not be a fact that is ignored. But because they lost Kawhi Leonard, because they lost Danny Green, they have been viewed as kind of this plucky underdog story. But I mean, they've got a lot of players on that team who have been through battles, a lot of legitimate NBA veterans, Marc Gasol, and so to me, they're a team that could be there at the end, depending on the way that the cookie crumbles in the bubble. And by the way, I'm still of the mind that the bubble format and the lack of travel, we don't know how that is going to affect different teams. We don't know who that is going to help most. I still think there's room for plenty of chaos once the playoffs begin in Orlando.
Bill Oren from The Athletic. When we get into all that chaos and the postseason, how much are we going to see AD at the five? How common is that going to be?
Well, I think against a team like Houston, it's going to need to be maybe even a majority of the time. But we've seen the Lakers almost always close with Anthony Davis at the five. It's their most lethal lineup. The Lakers get so much productivity, especially on the defensive end, from JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, and they give LeBron such a good target in the at the rim that there's huge value in playing both those guys. But in the playoffs, when you get into every possession mattering, I think in every possession feeling like crunch time, essentially, I think you're going to see it more. The LeBron and AD pick and roll is something that they have kind of kept in their back pocket. You haven't seen it a whole lot over the course of the season. They kind of busted it out against the Clippers right before the shutdown. That is probably their most lethal action. So I think once you get into the postseason, as the level of competition steps up, as the stakes are higher, you're going to just see a whole lot of LeBron and AD playing off each other in kind of 1-5 actions.
Bill Oram covers the Lakers for The Athletic. He is on Twitter, at Bill Oram, graciously making some time for us here on The Jim Rome Show. Mr. Oram, appreciate you, buddy. Continued good health to you and your family. Thanks for making time.
You too, William. Thank you.
Yeah, pal. To you, bud. Bill Oram on the show. He said it exactly right, better than I have. The Rockets' likelihood of shooting the lights out and winning multiple four best of seven series with that very unusual style of play is minuscule. But I'm getting to where Bill Oram is now. The likelihood they can beat a team they, you know, quote-unquote should not disrupt the natural order of things, I'm starting to believe. I'm starting to buy in. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, it really wasn't, that Charles Barkley and 99% of the other very impressive NBA minds out there in the talking head sphere thought there was no chance a team could win an NBA championship just by shooting a bunch of threes, i.e. the Golden State Warriors. They've gone small, but man, Harden is such a... I have so little trust in James Harden to be that guy in multiple game sixes and sevens, because I've seen so many times it hasn't happened. But it only takes once. I mean, LeBron was a utter disaster in big moments with the Heat that first year. The thing is, he had one, and I was there to cover it and write about it and talk about it on the Jim Rome Show. He had one brutal showing in the postseason, then he went into a bunker, his own words, and came out the next year a vastly improved postseason player, right? He didn't break him. Whereas Harden, it's not a one-off. We've seen this several times. But again, you know, maybe the style of play, some other guys hitting some shots. I don't think they can do it every single series, but beat a team from L.A.? I don't think they can beat the Clippers. I think that's such a terrible matchup for them. Beat the Lakers? Just shoot lights out in five of... you know, four or five games to steal a series? Maybe, maybe. Bill Ryder filling in for Jim Rome here on CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network. So much drama and uncertainty going on in Major League Baseball. So we're going to get with Bob Nightingale. He's going to give us the latest insider perspective on what's up with baseball and the likelihood this season can finish. Bob Nightingale joins me next here on The Jim Rome Show.